Welcome back to the special edition of the Business of Government Hour, exploring the intersection of research and practice. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and my guest today is Mark Fuge, assistant professor at the Department of Mechanical Engineering at the University of Maryland. So, Mark, what is the mission and purpose of the Informatics for Design, Engineering, and Learning Lab, the IDEAL Lab?
Yeah, so that's the lab that I run at the University of Maryland. Basically, our purpose is to help industries and people design better products at the end of the day, right? By understanding why they make the decisions they do and using data to help them make that better. So that's the informatics part, is the kind of data piece that we bring to it. At the end of the day, it's helping people be more creative.
Mm-hmm. So how long has it existed? How is it? Is it a course? Is it a school? I mean, what is it? What's the nuts and bolts of this particular lab? More importantly, along with that role, what are your other roles and responsibilities, whether it's, you know, vis-a-vis the lab or the Center for Risk, I believe you're part of, too? Why don't you tell us more about yourself then?
Sure. So, I mean, I'm a researcher and a scientist, so I direct a lab of people. So there is a physical space with people. So it's an actual lab that I direct, a bunch of researchers working on various projects, both for industry companies as well as government agencies. But then also, you know, I'm a faculty member, so one of my responsibilities is also teaching and then promoting the University of Maryland's mission as well as an educational institution.
So, you know, getting into, you know, the work that you're doing at the lab, and your work at University of Maryland. Yeah, every year, researchers and industry practitioners alike propose hundreds of new design methods. And I'd like to get your perspective on how can we best make sense of these methods, and is there any kind of structure to these methods that we can leverage to help sort of novices learn and understand design?
Sure. Okay. So this is an area that I've done quite a bit of work in. So this is really, one of the things that I find most interesting about the work that I do is can we take lots of different creative people doing different things and try and use the data that they're generating about it to learn something about how we do design. So in this particular instance, I have done work on looking at, okay, so when we talk about designing a product, usually what that means is people take a series of steps, right? So I might go talk to some customers. I'll come back to my office and I will think about, okay, well, based on what the customer's told me, is there some direction we need to go? And then I might prototype something, take it back to the customer. So these are all different steps that people do in the process from going from an idea in my head to a physical thing that you buy in the store. And it turns out many different people have different ways of doing that. And so one of the things we've been able to do is look at, okay, if I collect lots of different examples or case studies of how people have gone through and done that, I can actually see that there are certain steps or clusters of steps that people all do together, which is interesting. And this is the kind of thing that you wouldn't get. So if I just gave you a case file with thousands of different projects, and you'd read like one or two of them, it'd be kind of interesting. Maybe you'd see some themes, but it's not the kind of thing that humans are going to do. But this is the kind of thing where an algorithm could come in and say, okay, well, let me read through those thousands of case studies, and can I see patterns in what people do and emerge? It turns out the answer to that is yeah, there's actually lots of different structures and ways that people solve problems that you wouldn't get just by looking at individual one or two pieces.
So, Mark, would you tell us more about the Open IDEO community? What has come out of this effort?
Sure. So they're really – so I don't you know, that's not something I run. This is an independent third party. It's an open source platform run by a design consultancy called IDEO. So what's interesting about them is they have these kind of big picture social mission challenges. So what they'll do is they'll post a challenge online. So an example of this would be, how do we restore vibrancy to cities facing economic decline? So I think, you know, a city that used to be good, but now is maybe going through some tough times. What are some things we can do, what products, social services, government policy programs that we could do to maybe solve that? And so what's interesting about this community is that people will come and they'll submit hundreds, sometimes thousands of ideas on how to solve that challenge. And what's cool about that is that I can read your idea, you can read my idea, and together we can come up with something that maybe neither one of us would come up with. So what's interesting to me about that is, that it works at all. So they've actually had several examples. I mean, not every idea ends up being fielded, but there are several examples where somebody will post something. They'll work on it together with, let's say, 10, 20 other people, and eventually there will be an example in the world that you can go and see. So, you know, an example was this Made in the Lower East Side program for this vibrancy challenge that I was talking about. So this is a pop-up. They create these little pop-up stores in different cities where if I have a dilapidated storefront, I can actually go in and set up like a business or a classroom to kind of revitalize a neighborhood. So that's something that came out of some of the efforts of people in this community. So what I find interesting as a researcher is trying to figure out, like, how does that work? And can I make that better for people? Because that's when you hear about things like crowdsourcing or open innovation, this is the kind of thing people usually think about, but the kind of devil's in the details. You know, how do I actually make that work? And other ways to make that happen better.
So, you know, can you help me understand what is augmented reality interfaces? What are they?
Sure. So that's other work that I've done. So augmented reality, if you've ever heard of the kind of Oculus VR, like the thing. All right. So that's called virtual reality. So that's where I put on a headset and I look around. I can basically look around a virtual world. Augmented reality refers to both the physical and the real. So I could look at this table or look at my car and I could see digital stuff that appears to be on the real thing. So it's augmenting reality in that sense. So what's interesting from where people have used this in design has to do with things like, can I sort of physically sculpt an object that I want to create? So rather than going like clicking with a mouse on my computer to create a car, can I physically sculpt it like with my hands and see it there in front of me? People have also used this a lot in manufacturing. So if you think about how are we going to, you know, do very complex manufacturing tasks, one of the things I can do is say, if I'm assembling a car, I can actually put on a headset and actually see how the pieces go together, right? So you can imagine I'm trying to, you know, top up my oil in my car, you know, but I've never done it before. I can put on this headset and show me, oh, here's, based off what I see about your car, here's where the oil should be, here's what the dipstick is, you know, here's how you would go about doing it. So that's a really interesting way to bring both experts as well as just regular people to interact with their products in new ways.
It's fascinating. It's also a learning capacity that's, untapped. That's really interesting. So, you know, something like that goes right into my next question, which is measuring design creativity is crucial to evaluating the effectiveness of idea generation methods. How do you systematically find out what makes an idea good or creative? And in doing so, how can you use probabilistic terms to create a family of repeatable creative metrics?
Sure. Okay. So, I mean, when we say that we want to work on work that helps make people more creative, a kind of natural, you know, if I was to walk into your office and say, hey, you know, give me $10,000 and I'll teach you how to be creative, you would rightfully say, well, okay, that's nice. And, you know, maybe there's something there, but I want you to prove to me that that's true before I, you know, give you a bunch of money to do this, right? There's no shortage of consultancies in the world that will walk in to do that, right? And that might be fine if I'm selling a product, but as a researcher, right, I have to be able to prove to people that if you're going to use this, that it's good. And so one of the challenges to that is that creativity is kind of very subjective, and there's different ways that people break it down, right? Generally speaking, I mean, people in engineering obviously study this because of products, but people in management focus on this as well. Architects, industrial designers, we all are interested in what makes this thing creative. Generally, people have come down with a couple of different ways they decompose this. So is it new? Have I ever seen it before? Does it provide some value to me? And if it's new and provides some value to me, most people agree that at least those things are important. But then the question is, how do I measure that? So the way that is probably the most popular right now is something that's called the consensual assessment technique. It's very popular in the business and psychology communities. This is basically where I have a bunch of experts who work in that area. So if I'm designing cell phones, I'll get a couple of cell phone experts or executives or designers, and then they will be responsible for telling me what is novel and what has high value. Part of the problem with this, and where you bring the kind of the data side into it, is I can't do that for everything. So if you go and you generate 1,000 ideas, it's going to take me a lot of time. And these experts are usually pretty expensive. I mean, they don't have all the time in the world to do this, right? And so there's an interesting question there, which says, well, we have people, very talented people who are willing to provide us data on what is and is not creative. So a natural question would be, can we take those people's assessments and figure out what does make something creative? So that's a lot of the work that I do is taking data from people and then using those to kind of update assessments on what might make products similar or not.
How has data-driven design been used in the business of government? We'll explore this question and so much more when our special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns.